wanted to continue in Rambam in Hilchot Deot in Perek Hey Halacha Yud Gimel, just to finish off, right, chapter 5, verse Halacha 13. Let me just find it. Okay? So just to review, we were talking last time about, the fact that we really talked about two topics. One was that Masa'ov Matano Yeh Be'emuna, right? Be'emet Be'emuna. That a Talmud Chacham is supposed to be honest, right? And I said to you that that I think that there's also an aspect to being Be'emuna, in a state of faith, right? Sort of being able to see the bigger picture helps you to stay honest, right? And Medagdek Al Atzmo B'Cheshbon, right? That such a person, in a state of honesty, and the concept of a Talmud Chacham. We talked about the difference between a Chacham and a Talmud Chacham and how and why we call people a Talmud Chacham and everybody can be a Talmud Chacham, etc., etc. Okay? So I wanted to sort of get a little further along in this topic. There's two things that are interesting here. First of all, why do you have to be honest? Like, why do you have to be honest? Why be honest? So you're not honest. So, you come home and your mom isn't home from work yet, and she just made really good cupcakes for your sister's birthday, right? And they look so good. So you eat one. Then she comes home and says, "Who took the cupcake?" Of course, if she said it like that, you say, "Oh, me, sorry." But she doesn't say it like this. "Who took the cupcake?" Right? She's like, "All right." Okay, so you just told this little lie. Okay, what? Like, nuclear war is going to break out because nobody knows who ate the cupcake? Like, put aside the fact that your mother, if she's a reasonably intelligent parent, already knows that you ate the cupcake because, I've been around my kids for enough time. I already know who eats what when. It's just the way it is. But, like, okay, so you lied. So what? So life is going to be over. Like, why do you have to be honest? What's the value of being honest? Yeah?
Such a big part of life is being able to trust other people, because you can really never know what other people are thinking. And if you're not willing at some point to just take their word for something, then you're never going to be able to deal with other people in your life. So there should be this exhortation to be honest, because otherwise if people aren't honest, then trusting people loses its value to begin with, and okay, No one can do anything.
So most people will come up with an idea. Is there a window open, or is that just the natives, right? If most people will come up with something along the lines of what you just said. In other words, it's important to be honest in life because things don't really work if you're not honest. You need to be able to trust people, which basically at the end of the day, if you think about it, is a practical understanding of honesty. It's just practical to be honest. And by the way, this is true. I remember...
I think it only works if everybody's honest.
Well, no, it works to some degree the more people are honest. Because everybody isn't honest, but honesty still works.
If you're honest and everybody else cheats you, then you don't get anything from being honest.
Well, so that brings us back to the question. If it's a practical issue, then sometimes you'd be honest, sometimes you're not. And it just depends where it works practically, right? And don't get me wrong. The practical reasons for being honest is not just about how you work within society. There are lots of practical reasons to be honest. I remember I had this whole speech prepared. I was all set because, God willing, one day all of you will get married and you'll have children and you can count on the fact that at some point you're going to catch each one of your children in some fib. That's just the nature of the beast. That's parenting 101. So you can wait until they lie and then have some difficult crisis and you and your wife will sit down and talk about it. Or you can know that that's going to happen and you can spend the next 5-10 years preparing for that moment. And that's me. Right? Like, I was waiting for the first time one of my kids would fib, and when they did and I caught them, I was ready for Parenting 101. Binny conquers the mountain of falsehood, right? And there were two things that I did. And I took my, one of my children, well, it was actually each of them, because everybody gets there. And so I remember that this happened actually specifically with Yonatan. And I take him into the living room, and he couldn't have been more than 5 or 6 years old, right? And I had this whole speech prepared. I had this whole discussion with him. And I remember once we talked about this, I told him, George Washington or whatever version I chose, or, you're lying and who are you and whatever. I took him over to the mirror and said, "What do you see? This is who you are, and you are your word. And if you lose your word, you lose yourself. Can you lose yourself?" We had this great discussion. And then in the middle, my aunt's in the kitchen and the phone rings, right? And before thinking, because I'm in the middle of this great discussion, I just tell him I'm not here, right? And then I catch myself, and I'm like, okay, there went that whole speech right out the window. Like, I'm telling him all about lying, and I'm lying, right? So from that moment, I have never, and I hope never too, ever said that again. I just say I can't come to the phone. Like, that's an interesting question. Why we tell lies that we don't really need to tell. Like, I understand you're at the border and you stole $500,000 and they're asking you, you know, do you have anything to declare? So, okay, I guess there's a pretty practical reason to lie. But this is dumb to lie in the case that I was just saying. It's just dumb. There's no reason to.
What if you do lie and when you're on the border and, like, let's say you don't want to be, like, a liar. You want to be honest.
Well, then you blew it because you just lied, right?
You're going to jail. What?
I mean, the Rambam, when the Rambam speaks, by the way, about the middle path, that middle path is true for everything, right? I mean, and it's true for honesty and falsehood as well, right? We're doing Hilchos Deos, trying to see if we can keep them honest. that's true for everything. There are instances in this world. In fact, the famous example from the Gemara, from the Brayta, is, you know, you go over to a kala on her wedding day, and she says to you, how do I look? Do I look okay? And you think that this woman, this bride, has the most horrendously ugly dress you've ever seen in your life, right? So if you're being honest, I shall not tell a lie. I'm never going to tell a lie. You say, well, you know, since you asked me, to be honest, that's the most horrendously ugly dress I've ever seen in my life. It's an hour before her chuppah. What's she going to do? So Beit Shammai, and I'm really oversimplifying the case here, Beit Shammai would suggest that's what you have to do. You have to be honest. She's asking you for an honest opinion. Beit Hillel says, Ma pitam. Now the Hasidim who interpret Beit Hillel, where is this? Do you remember where this is? There you go. See, it's not what you know, it's who you know. See? Baruch Hashem.
Tzuvot.
Where's my pen when I need it? Hang on, I'm borrowing your pen.
About third line down.
It's not Gemara, it's just Mishnah, right?
It's a Gemara.
Right. So the question becomes, right? So there are instances in life where, not only is, oh, the famous example, by the way, is the case of Aaron, right? Where Aaron, you know, is considered the Oev Shalom and the Rodev Shalom. We find this in Pirkei Avos. And he used to go over to one fellow and tell him that this guy really wants to make up with you, but he's embarrassed. And he used to go over to the next fellow and say, this guy really wants to make up with you, and he's embarrassed. And then they would come together and they'd make peace. And then later they figured out what Aaron HaKohen did. And then they were grateful to him, right? And basically, he lied. But sometimes, you know, sometimes if you're... So how do you know when you're lying and it's okay? And how do you know when you're lying and it's not okay? So most people will say that lying... You don't lie because practically you don't lie. First of all, you can't run a society if people lie. And second of all, if nobody can trust each other, then who are we? But I'm not sure that's the real reason you don't lie, at least not from a Jewish perspective. Okay?
From a Jewish perspective, wouldn't this be the same reason we do everything else?
Which is?
Hashem, to bring the objective of whatever Hashem is in the world, which is honesty.
Oh, so let's just understand how that works. What does it mean that when I do something, I bring Hashem into the world? If the reason that I don't lie is because the Torah tells me, midvar sheker tircha, to distance yourself from a lie. Take this a little further. If you could lie, right? Like, think about it, okay? I don't know, you got up onto your bunk bed, and you stepped on the guy's bed, your roommate's bed underneath, right? And you broke something. His iPod was broken there.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's Yitzhak. Shkoyach. Okay, here, I'll read it to you since we were Zocha. Okay? Right?
There's no mitzvah in the Torah to say the truth, by the way.
Right.
It doesn't say, Shidaber Emet. It doesn't say. It says, Midbar Sheker Tircha.
Right.
There's no mitzvah to say the truth.
Just don't be a deal-bear false witness, or just don't lie.
That's a yes, a false witness, something else. But, you know, there's no mitzvah to say the truth. Because sometimes you don't have to say the truth, like what you heard you just said. At times it's better withhold the truth. If you can hurt someone's feeling, it's better not to say the truth. But that's not a lie. Withholding the truth is a difference.
Excellent. It's true. So how do you, by the way, so I just want to, just a sidebar, which is not our topic here. I just want to give you a piece of food for thought. A year from now, when this topic comes up again, and we want to know where it is, Bezrat Hashem, I'll know where to find it. You know why? Because I wrote it down. It's just a klal. All the things in life that you do, whenever you go to a shiur, you go to a lecture, you go to hear a professor, not even in Torah, it's always worth having some way to recall the things that are valuable to you. It could be it's not valuable to you, you know. I mean, if he was quoting, I don't know, the Gemara of, you know, Mashiach Me'ematai Ka'atimar, so that's in Sanhedrin Tzedekes, then I wouldn't write it down because that one I remember. But that's just a stamazoi, right? The second thing that's worth thinking about, which again is not our topic, but just for, I think that one of the great holes that people dig themselves into is when they don't know something, but they don't want to say that they don't know something. Like imagine that, you know, next year when you all decide to stay Shanabet, you know, and it's the middle of the year, and some Tzitzik Shana Aleph guy comes along, and he says something, and you don't know where it is, right? You don't know where it is, right? Always good to say, I don't know. That's just a personal opinion. But anyway, back to our topic. So how do you know the difference? So here's a theory, okay? And there are different mafarshim that talk about this. I think that at the end of the day, if you can lie in certain circumstances, it means that Hashem has to be distant from you, okay? I don't know, like I said, you're getting up onto your bed and somebody's iPod is on the bed below and you step on it and you crack it, but it's, oh my gosh, like I can't afford to pay for an iPod. And then later the guy comes into the room and he says, who broke my iPod, right? And he says, did you see who broke my iPod, right? So you say no, because like Lanaim, so you've just lied. So we can all do mental gymnastics, I didn't see me because there's no mirror, right? But we know that we lied, right? If Hashem really ran the world, if what we said in the last sort of halacha when we were talking about the fact that, you know, in your business dealings, if Hashem is really present in your life and you really understand the bigger picture and we live up to what it says, you know, Dalif Nehemiah Talmud, know before you whom you stand, Shiviti Hashem the Negdi Tamid, I put Hashem opposite me always, then you wouldn't be able to lie. You know? You wouldn't be able to lie. It'd be like cheating on the test when the proctor is sitting right next to you. Like, you just wouldn't be that stupid. So if you can lie, then it means that on a certain level, in that moment, Hashem is not really there. You know, you get a fellow, and he davens three times a day, and he learns Talmud, Daf Yomi, Yerushalmi, and he has the best hechsher in town, and he's Bucky Bashas, but he cheats on his income tax. So when he's cheating on his income tax, Hashem just isn't really there. There's something missing. So when it says...
Why is something missing when there's something to do with income tax? Is it because he doesn't really know well... much about income tax?
Because it's a very good question. Why is something missing? Because in that moment, because it takes a lot of effort to keep Hashem in your life. Maybe. It's too easy. The reason that we live in a world of nature, which to some degree is an illusion, and that illusion sort of drowns us in the reality that where is Hashem? I can't see Hashem. Allows me to forget Hashem. And because it allows me to forget Hashem, it gives me free choice. And it means that it's a lot of effort to keep Hashem in my life and in my picture. But hang on, right?
Taxes,
pardon?
He struggles with paying his taxes, therefore he's just looking for the easy way out.
Yeah, I don't know if everybody thinks of it that way. I think they just don't put it down to Hashem. I'll give you a better example. I'll make this simpler for you. There are things that parents do when their kids are not around that they won't do in front of their kids. Right? Like, let's say a person curses, but he won't curse in front of his kids. Right? So when his kids are watching, he feels a certain responsibility. That's because deep down he knows it's not appropriate to curse. So how come he curses when his kids aren't there? Like, if there's nothing wrong with cursing, curse when your kids are there. And if you think there's nothing wrong with cursing, then, you know, you get the point, right? So it's because your children are really there for you. You can see them. They're physically, the presence is an obvious reminder. But Hashem isn't as there for you. And so the ability to make Hashem more there for you affects everything. The reason, to be honest, is because then you're creating space for Hashem to come into your life. And I think that answers our second question. How do you know when it's okay to tell a fib and when it's not? I think, and this is a very dangerous thing to say. So this is just an opinion, and you have to test this opinion and see if it's really true. The question stands. I think that when you sense and you know deep inside that this fib is distancing you from Hashem, then there's a problem with this fib. But if this fib actually itself is a vehicle for bringing Hashem more into your life, then you know there isn't. Right? I had an instance once to give somebody a significant loan, and I felt that person would be embarrassed if they knew that the loan was coming from me, right? So I made up a whole story of a donor and whatever so that this person would feel that somebody else was giving him the loan, right? And then whenever he saw something, it doesn't matter because we'll get to that in a second, and he wasn't sure, wait a second, is this coming from them? So in that moment, I have to lie. So I lied. If But I didn't lie because it was for personal benefit. I lied because I didn't want to put this person in an uncomfortable position. And I really felt that that's what Hashem wanted me to do. I could be wrong. It's a risky thing to do. But at least if you think that, chances are you're headed in the right direction. Does that make sense? That's the measuring stick that I came up for on this topic, right? And by the way, you want to read see a great Gemara. Who's is this? Rav Noam's. Okay. So there's a Gemara in Yoma. I think it's on Pei Zayin. The Gemara says, The Gemara says, it's on Pei Gimel maybe. Vav, we'll try one more. Baruch Hashem. So they asked Rav, right? They were trying to understand, like, they're talking about the concept of Chilul Hashem, okay? And they're asking for examples. What's a good example of Chilul Hashem? So what does Rav say, right? And the Gemara, this is on Yuman Daf Pei Vav 86. Pardon? Now that's a different discussion. That's a Gemara of Avodah Zarah and Sanhedrin, I think. That there's different levels of Chilul Hashem, and that there are certain instances where if something's being done in front of, like for example, Shat Shmad, right? You're talking about Shat Shmad, like when you're allowed to die, when you're.
No, we're talking about if let's say a non-kosher store, and you know that the other person is going to go to the non-kosher store, but if there's 10 other non-kosher stores and there's a chance that he can go, then you can let him have the choice. You can give him the food, but if there isn't those 10 other options to go to, then you can stay in.
Right, but that's more a question of cheskas. There's also a din in what a tzibur is. In other words, for example, that we know that there's 3 averot, right? There are 3 transgressions that you have to be willing to die for. But and let's say not wearing tefillin isn't one of them, right? Or putting on shatnez isn't one of them. So if some guy comes and puts a gun to your head and says, put on the shatnez, you put on the shatnez, right? Better to wear shatnez one day and live to not wear shatnez many other days. But if it's a public desecration of God's name, then it very well may be, right, that you actually have to, write that you, there's a number of different places, that then you actually, if I'm not mistaken, then you actually may have to allow yourself to be killed. And one of the ways of defining that is if there's a presence of 10 individuals, 10 Jews who see you, perhaps including yourself, to see that. So that's one inyan. But he's talking about something else here. He's talking about what constitutes an action of Chilul Hashem. You know the example he chooses? This is fascinating. Amar Rav, kegon ana, ishakilna bisra mitabcha, velo yahivna dami la'altar. He says, if I buy meat from the butcher and I don't give him his money right away. Now that's interesting, because that's not dishonest. That's just, you know, you're delaying a payment. Pardon?
I think that
would be case specific to him. Like public. Because he's a great Talmud Chacham. In fact, he doesn't pay. So this is what the Rambam is going to get into now. So what does the Rambam say? Pardon? Well, it says lo talin pulat sachir. You're not allowed to pasuk. You're not allowed to put off a day laborer's wages. But that's not the same as being obligated to pay him right away. In other words,
in both cases, you're paying the person. Right?
Well, what we're going to see now is the difference between what you're likely obligated to do and what a person should do, but may not be obligated to do. Like Rabbi Spiegelman just said, that you may not be obligated to tell the truth, but you're definitely not allowed to tell a lie, right? So listen to what it says here. So it says, middakdek al atzmo b'chashbon, a person should be very exacting on himself when he makes when he keeps an accounting of what he does, right? And you want to be the person. Now, remember, we're talking about a Talmud Chacham here. We're talking about a person who's striving to be representative of Torah, to live a Torah life, to bring Hashem and Torah into his life. And once you get into that mode, you become a representation of Hashem. You may not have wanted this. You may not feel comfortable. You know, when you go back to whatever university you go to, you just spent a year learning Torah in Israel. We talked about this last time. You are now representative of Hashem. If you do something dishonest, it's much, much more significant than a fellow who never went to yeshiva. It just is. It's not because of anything you're doing in particular. It may not even be because of the way you dress, right? It has to do with the reality. So that person has a responsibility to go a little above and beyond. Right? Now, why is the Rambam talking about this here? This parak, you'll see, this is going to be a summation of sorts This parak basically is the conclusion of the Rambam's system for how I develop my character traits in order to develop a close relationship with Hashem. We're not talking right now, that's parak vav, about developing a close relationship with my fellow human beings. Being honest allows Hashem into your life, right? So, a person should be more exacting. You should give more easily, and you should give in more easily. You know, like when you sit around the table and two guys are having an argument, and one said, no, the best team was the Bulls. And the other guy says, well, that's not true. The New York Knicks are actually the best team in history, right? And the first guy looks at me and says, well, that's ridiculous. Somebody has to say, okay, whatever, right? And everybody's sitting around, sort of, the guy who says, okay, whatever, okay, so he's got a little more maturity. And sometimes, you know, both of them,
pardon? That's me, but I don't really care about sports, so do I really have any merit to that?
I don't know what you mean by the statement, that's me.
That would be me. Like,
which would be me?
The guy who's just like, okay, whatever. Like,
yeah, okay, it doesn't matter who it is.
I don't like sports.
It's just emotional.
It's just an allegory, right? The point is... Right. The point is... The point is, not just on the little things. Like when you walk by a table and one guy says, oh, yeah, I'll bet you. Oh, yeah, how much you want to bet? So you already know. It doesn't matter what the conversation is. Someone has some growing up to do. That's just the nature of the beast. See, if you're having fun with it, it's one thing. But, you know, sometimes also when you really know you're right, you know, it's not just about giving in. Why is giving in such a good habit in those kinds of circumstances? Because, A, you can avoid embarrassing someone. You can avoid putting a person on the spot. And, B, it's healthy to let go. Pardon?
Also further conflict in the future.
Yeah, no, exactly right. Pardon? I saw a great picture on the internet, and the title of the email was why there are so few bank robberies and liquor store holdups in Israel. And then there's a picture of like 8 chayalot, and they all have M16 slug over their back, and they're waiting at the counter. It's a good idea, right? V'notenu v'tel lachim, and not just in the little things, but in the big things. Like imagine you lend somebody money. Okay, it's Mirtz Hashem. You know, many of you are leaving home to go back to America for the summer, right? And so you're approaching June when you're going to go fly or whatever you decide to do. And you know, one of the guys here is in a tough spot. I don't know, his Taliban didn't come or his parents didn't, whatever. And he really needs some money, so you lend him $1,000. That's a lot of money. It's certainly a lot of money for where you at in life, I think, right? And you know, but you're not supposed to push a person, lend a person money. Now it's like June 2nd, right? And said, listen, I really need the money back. And he says, I feel bad. I'll give it to you. Don't worry. Right? So do you give in? Do you not give in? Is it your money? Is it not your money? Whatever. Right? Do you make sure that he remembers that you lent him a 10 agura piece? Like everybody has to find their range. That's why this isn't defined halakhically. This is an ethical proposal. But you be the person who lets go. Right? Like there are definitely people who owe me money. Right? But I don't remind them of it all the time. They'll get it to me. They won't get it to me. That's the way life works. You know, if Hashem doesn't want me to have that money, I'm not going to have it no matter how much I push the person. And if Hashem wants me to have that money, then I'll have it whether this person decides to pay me or not. If you really have that emunah, if Hashem's really in your life, you won't step over those bounds, right? V'notein dmei hamekach le'alter. And when you buy something, you pay for it right away. V'eino na'aseh lo arev lo kablan v'lo evo bar shah. You don't want to become a debt collector. You got to try to avoid in life. Pardon?
You can't have a credit card?
No, that's a different scenario. Debt collectors where you... I think what the Rambam here is talking about is the case where you have to be the one pushing someone to do something that they can't necessarily do. It creates bad sort of character conflict. You know what I mean? You don't want to be the person like... You know, let's say a guy, you sit down at the lunch table and two guys are having a discussion. And one says, I really want to buy the car. And the other says, well, you know, I would sell you my car for like $2,000. And he says, I wish I had $2,000. Don't be such a tzaddik. Don't step in and say, you know what, I'll give you $2,000, I'll lend you $2,000. Because you think you're doing a mitzvah. What ends up happening is if he can't pay back the $2,000, right? So then you either have to come out after him or you create conflict, right? So you don't want to be in a situation where you're collecting debts when you don't need to. On the other hand, doing the chesed of giving debts or giving tzedakah, the highest level of tzedakah, that's a different story. Yeah.
Let's say you're not the one who the money is going to. Let's say you're sort of a bookie. Do you think that's any different?
No, that's even worse.
Because I could be wrong, but I think there's a large history in Spain.
Money lending.
Being not only money lenders, but I was going to say the tax collectors. I know that's one of the reasons for the Spanish expulsion.
Well, you notice the Rambam here is not talking halacha. There's no issur to be a tax collector, although right, although there are certain professions. If you look in the Gemara, the tax collectors were considered the wicked, evil. I think that's still true today in certain circles, right? So we're obviously not talking about that, but you don't want to be in a situation where you sort of there's certain types of profession, and one of them is collecting money, where you almost inevitably have to step over lines.
Fundraising.
Pardon?
Fundraising
has tremendous challenges. Tremendous ethical challenges, honesty challenges, tremendous. And you have to be very, very careful. Absolutely. I hope as well as in the leadership training, we're going to get into a discussion about that, because I think it's an important thing for you guys to learn, right? The nature of fundraising, right? Eino mechayev atzmo b'divrei mekach u'memkar b'makom shelo chiva oto Torah. K'dei shi'amod b'diburo v'lo yishaneh. This is an interesting halacha, although it's not halacha. A person shouldn't step in to obligate himself in a case where the Torah does not obligate him. Now, there are different possibilities what the Rambam is talking about. Most of the farshim say what we're talking about here is verbal contracts. Okay? The halacha is that in order for a deal to be sealed, there has to be a kinyan. Okay? There has to be some physical action that seals the deal. The best example I can think of is a wedding. Right? You're at the wedding hall. People have put down money on the wedding hall. The groom is there, the bride is there, the families are there, right? But you know, and he's now signing a he's willing to agree to a ketubah. And he calls two witnesses, and they're his best friends, and they witness that this ketubah is written and signed, whatever. He has to do a kinyan. If he doesn't do some physical action to demonstrate that he's taking upon himself this obligation, then the ketubah is no good. And not only is the ketubah no good, the marriage is no good. You'd have to go back and redo the whole thing without getting into the halachic complications. You have to do a kinyan. Now, there are different types. You ever see this at the wedding? The guy just picks something up. You ever see that at a wedding? It's called, right? Kinyan Hagbah. It's just the easiest form of a kinyan because this guy's sitting down. He doesn't have to get up and pull something or whatever, right? But that's one form. There's a physical action. So let's say he didn't do a physical action. The guy comes to you and says, listen, you know what? I really want to sell this car. And I say, yeah, how much you want for it? And he says, well, the market rate is $20,000, but you know what? I'm really desperate for the money. I'll give it to you for $10,000. And you say, wow, $10,000 for a Ferrari. That's like amazing, right? Unbelievable, okay? So you say, I'm in. You've done absolutely nothing halachically. And even if you say, are you sure you're going to sell me this car? Because I'm going to give up this other deal. Yeah, no, absolutely. If you didn't sign a contract, if you didn't make kinyan, you've done nothing, right? Lalacha. Having said that, if you make a verbal contract, you should honor it. Because not honoring your word, right, unless there's some external or extenuating circumstances, it creates an air of dishonesty about you. And that's what the Rambam says, right? Don't, on the one hand, take on the obligation you're not let obligated to take. The Chafetz Chaim, by the way, was very, very machpid that any financial transaction should be accompanied by a contract. I will not, and some of you have experienced this, you know, there have been a few times this year where a student needs 50 shekels, he forgot his wallet, we're going on a deal, whatever. I'm always happy, you know, if somebody needs help if I have money on me, but I will not do it unless we write it down. Right? And you write it down. Really, you should do it with edus. But for a 50 shekel bill, I don't know, I'm not going to go find two edim to sign a shtar. But you should really do it with edim. And you sign it. And the person who lent the money holds on to it. And then he has an obligation when he comes and he gives you back his 50 shekel that you give it to him and he rips it up. Why do you do this? Right? I'll give you an even better example. There was an organization that wanted me to take a job. And in the nonprofit world, especially in the Jewish nonprofit world, there are a lot of people who work without contracts. You know, you're in yeshiva. They hire you as a rebbe. They tell you what you're going to earn. You say, great. And you get your salary, and that's it. No contract, right? Very dangerous on a number of different levels. And we don't do that here, right? And I once, I was in America, and I was there for a year, whatever. And we were first married. And there was a large organization that wanted me to, they wanted to hire me to be like a director, a regional director of whatever. And they were offering me this like really good salary, and they were going to get me a house, and I would have to have a car because I'd be in a bunch of different states and do a lot of traveling. And I was struggling with it. It just didn't seem like I couldn't quite put my finger on it. So I went to talk to a few people, including one person who had worked for this organization and left. So I figured he had nothing beholden. So he smiled and he said, "Well, here's my advice to you." He said, "Ask them to put it in a contract. Just ask them to put it in a contract, and then when you have a contract, then you can whatever." So I thought that was a little strange, but I thought it was good advice. You know, let's see it written down, because they kept So when I asked them to put it in the contract, then I started to get a him and a her and a whatever. And, you know, yeah, we can write things down. Don't worry about it, whatever. Anyway, it turned out that they were offering me a great salary, but they wanted me to fundraise it. They wanted me to raise the salary. I'd never done fundraising before in my life. And they also didn't want to write down a contract. And putting aside whether they're right or wrong halachically, which is an interesting question, you know, I just did. It was a very valuable experience because I didn't in the end take up the job, and I'm quite happy because one of the people there ended up getting indicted. But that's another story. But you should always write things down. You know, you go to work for Camp Moshava, and you will get a contract in the mail, and they will expect you to sign it, and you'll have a contract. And that's very healthy. And it's especially healthy because if there's a misunderstanding later on, you have what to go to. So that's one half. The other half is, having said that, right, you don't want to be doing things without a contract because you create the possibility for conflict and enmity and Chilul Hashem. And even if you think you're right and you were honest, if he thinks you were dishonest or you said something else, you're going to create a Chilul Hashem one way or the other. Why do that, right? V'im nitchayvu lo acherim badin marichu mochel lahem. And if others have obligations to him, you know, be forgiving. Let things go when you can. Be the one who lends. And don't get into your neighbor's business. Don't take his job. Don't compete with him for his job. Right? Be sort of above on the up and up. Right? Don't create discomfort for another person. You know what I mean? In other words, like, think about this. You know what the best reason that, let's say you lend a person money, and he knows you've lent him money, and you're doing everything great. You're not asking him for it, and he'll get it to you when he can, whatever. And let's say it's a significant amount of money. Every time he sees you, he's going to be uncomfortable. Right? Why would you want to be in a situation where you're causing someone discomfort just by being, without doing anything? But if you can somehow do this in a way where he doesn't know it's coming from you, which, by the way, is the halacha, there are different levels of tzedakah. If you can give tzedakah in such a way that it puts a person on his feet and he doesn't know who you are and you don't know who he is, that's the highest level of tzedakah, right? So if you can do that, why not do that? Don't be the source of discomfort. Be the source of joy and of love and of peace and of harmony and of honesty. Klalo shel davar, and this is the rule. Yiyem min ha-nirdafim v'lo min ha-rodfim. You be the one that people are running after to get money from, rather than the person who was running after others to get it. Min ha-ne'alavim v'lo min ha-alvim. Be the one who sometimes is, what's the ne'alav, not put off, how's it translated here? Humiliated isn't such a good term, but okay, close enough. You be the one who's willing to be embarrassed, be humiliated, and not be the one, chas v'shalom, who's the cause of such a negative experience. That a person who lives by these rules, he is the person who becomes basically a vehicle for Kiddush Hashem. He becomes a vehicle for bringing Hashem into the world because people see him and say that's how it should be. Right? And that's basically sort of the summation of Parakeh. Okay? To be honest, To all the different character traits that we spoke about here in this parak that are worth kind of reviewing. And, you know, one of the things, by the way, that's really worthwhile doing is to sit down when you do Chazara one day on Hilchos Deos, which I think this is one of those rarest of texts that if a person could do Chazara on this text every month or every year, you'd be the better for it. Like, if you think about the things that we're studying here and how valuable these things are in your dealings and day-to-day, be valuable. When you do that, it's good to have a short list, you know, honesty, whatever the different qualities are. Okay, now we're ready to start Perek Vav. So let's take back the Perek. We got like 5 minutes. At least we'll start. Does that make sense? Do you prefer to break here? Yes, you do the beginning of Perek Vav. That's true. That's a good point. Okay, we can do the beginning of Perek Vav here. It's true. Doesn't matter. We just collected them, so I'll give you the Perek Vav. It's okay. Doesn't matter. Takes a second. Keep it honest. Here, this is Perek Vav. Okay. This here, Shkach. Okay.